If you are a marketing enthusiast and you wish to learn the tricks up the sleeves of seasoned marketeers, you are at the right place. I am your host, Nishant Goyal, and this is the Marketing Chakravyuh podcast. In this episode, we have with us Lucas Walker. If you are a marketer and you don't know him already, what are you even doing in your life? Lucas is a serial entrepreneur working to make dogs happier and healthier through Treats Happen, one of his many ventures. He also helps B2B sales teams to win more at the sport of sales using modern selling techniques. Oh, and this is also his first guest appearance as the founder and CEO of Rolled Up Podcast Network. He dropped a lot of knowledge bombs in here, given his unique experience with sales, marketing, and entrepreneurship. So let's get started.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited. This is, I think, the first podcast I'm doing as the founder and CEO of the Rolled Up Podcast.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So it's a little piece of history here, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah. During our conversation in DGM, I went through the Rolled Up Podcast through the Amazon one, Amazon versus Shopify. Actually, you know, for a minute, I was like, what? You guys were having trouble finding one field where Amazon has not taken its hands.
Yeah. Home insurance, everything. It's crazy. Yeah. It's nuts. Check out the one with Wes Barker about Houdini. That's another fun one. If you like marketing, honestly, Houdini is the best marketer ever.
Sure thing. I would love to. Since you've had a lot of experience with entrepreneurship and not just marketing, it's going to be an interesting conversation from different perspectives.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I think a lot about how I identify, and I think I'm a marketing-driven founder is probably the best description of me.
Wow. Looking forward. So let me pick the mail. I should have it by now. But I'm really curious, Lucas, what was the moment when you decided that, okay, I should go into marketing? Marketing is what I would love to do all my life.
Yep. So I actually remember the exact moment that I knew marketing was a career for me. It was in my third year of university, sitting in a marketing class, and I just loved it. I actually wanted to go and read the textbook. Finance, whatever, I don't care. Accounting is interesting enough to a point, but I didn't care to go above and beyond. But just that marketing and promotions was just sitting in that class, that feeling. It's almost like being in love when you meet your partner and you know that they're the one that you can just do this for the rest of your life. There have been a handful of times that I experienced that. I would say sitting in that marketing class after the date with my first girlfriend, when I text a couple of after the date with my girlfriend, when I text a couple of friends saying I think I just met my future wife, and when I ate my first burrito, I would say those are the three moments that it just felt like home.
Wow, it was a good trial.
It was. And then same professor a year later for that class, we had to do some ad campaigns, and I did a YouTube video. I went all in on social because they wouldn't let me blow the whole budget on a Super Bowl commercial. And the video for that class has almost 2 million YouTube views now, and it's paid for the course several times over, textbook too.
Wow.
From the YouTube ad money. Get that YouTube money.
That's interesting. Must be an experience for you. YouTube ad money can be this much.
Well, and this is 2011. So making money online was still kind of like the Wild West or a lot of stigmas. And I remember getting this email from Google saying, we want to pay you. And I just thought, okay, buddy, like good phishing attempt, looking pretty legit. You want to pay me, send me a check and I'll deposit it at the bank. Because I'm like, I'm not giving my banking information. This is suspect as hell, especially because I wasn't actively creating videos. I didn't even really know it existed. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward like maybe 3-4 weeks, I get a check for $683 from Google.
Wow.
Again, when you're making maybe, you know, 3-4 grand a month right out of school, like that's not insignificant for something that I did for school, for a class, something that I already had.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that that's the first money that I truly made myself online.
Wow. I look forward to such experience. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're there soon. So should we dig into how I would define marketing?
Yeah, I would love to know how you define marketing, what it is for you.
So to me, it's every aspect that touches a business's customers. And they might not know their customers yet. They might not be customers anymore. Maybe they're investors, but there's still anyone who might transact money with that business is my definition of customer. So SDRs, cold calling someone. If that's your first impression with a company, that's marketing. Customer support. Perfect examples. I was at IKEA and I did curbside pickup. And the employee just kind of checked my ID and then ran away. They didn't say, okay, now let's make sure this order is correct. All of that, every customer touch point, the ad copy, the quality of the product. If you're Burger King in hot water right now, but if you're Burger King and someone says, you know what, they took down the ad, I'm going to give them a shot. I no longer want the Big Mac. I want the flame broiled Whopper from Burger King. I've heard it's good. And they go and the flame broiled Whopper sucks because it's been sitting there for 90 minutes and they didn't heat it up and you get food poisoning. That's marketing. That's what your customers think of your brand. They don't care about your Twitter memes. If your Wendy's is sick with the fast food example, I mean, obviously they'll care about your app experience. Starbucks is a great app. But if your main product sucks, at the end of the day, that's marketing. And we're seeing a lot of that now with product-driven marketing, which I think is a fancy way to say, make sure people know your product is good and what's good about your product. I think there's no shortage of stats that say 90% of a product's uses get unused. Look at Zoom. There's so much more you can do with it. Microsoft Excel, you can literally write computer programs in it. There are so many startups that are just front ends for Microsoft Excel because people just don't know how to use it to its full extent. And that's why product-driven marketing, getting more use out of the product, is coming up really hot right now. It's all products have good reviews. All products have customers. Take Slack, for instance, for a B2B example. There is not a decision maker on earth who doesn't know about Slack yet. But they might not know how to use it. They might not know why they should be using it. There could just be so many reasons around why they haven't adopted it yet because people just don't know about the products that it has. For instance, integration with Salesforce and their CRM now that they're acquired. So yeah, that's cool. How I would define marketing is really just anything that touches someone who could give your brand money.
Yeah. And since you brought in the concept of touch points, mm-hmm. how can now as a student or as someone who is just starting out or as an entrepreneur, how would you find out the touch points? Because many times what happens and has happened is people do not figure out the right touch points and end up ruining a very good campaign.
And what do you mean by that? By they run the campaign on the wrong channels or they oversaturate it?
Okay, so not knowing the right touch points for a consumer could end up in that the promotion is placed at wrong location. Mm-hmm. For example, a promotion for Burger King, if it is placed right next to the window or the payment gateway, mm-hmm. then when the order is getting taken, will have much more impact as compared to when it is being placed on the table, because a lot of BK people will just take it and go, take away.
Yeah, and I think that there's the right message and the right marketing at that right moment. The message at checkout will be very different from the message on the table. Sometimes you just want to leave that lasting impression where when you wrap it up and you have your food on the tray and you just wrap everything up, maybe the bottom of that print wraps up nicely so your garbage looks like a burger and it says don't forget to come back later or see you soon or 100% biodegradable, and it's leaving that lasting impression that yes, people remember the burger, but it's a fast food burger, it's going to be fine, it's not going to be mind-blowing, you're not going to go out of your way to go to a specific Burger King, Wendy's, McDonald's, Harvey's, whichever fast food chain there is, but they might remember that, wow, you know what, way less waste. If everyone just eats at McDonald's one less time and goes to Burger King will reduce a lot of waste in the landfill. So I think it's sometimes creating the lasting impression and having the right message where it's going to be delivered. And for a B2B example, this might be post-webinar. You know that customer, most people coming off a webinar aren't going to be ready to purchase. And so instead of hitting them with the, hey, want to book a call, want to book a call, want to book a call, get on a call, it's just talking about some of the initiatives that make you different. Great example is Shopify, who have set the record for carbon offsetting in their footprint. That's something that I remember. Uploading your cart is a huge deal. It's not something that you just impulsively do, but it's just reminding your customers, or in this case, potential customers, that you exist. And I think the same is said to be true when talking about retention marketing. It's 5 to 10 times easier to keep a customer than to go out and get a new one. So you have all the data on how the economics of acquiring a customer, but what are you reinvesting in keeping them as customers? What are you doing post-webinar to say, you know what? Half the people showing up to these things are our customers. A, how can we get them more involved to create a little bit more social proof? If I'm a potential client and I go to a webinar and the chat is just filled with happy customers, I'm probably going to sign up for a demo to see what the hell's going on. I'm not going to buy, but I just want to see what I'm missing out on. What all these people know that I don't. The other thing is going back to product-driven marketing. What can you do to make those customers who took the time out of their day to come to your webinar be more successful and go from 10% utilization to 15% utilization to 20, 30, and so on?
It really, yeah. If I think in form of funnel, you are literally taking your customers to the next step just by providing them the right environment and by providing a good product. So in long run, also increasing customer lifetime value. And having a good product is by itself very important. So yeah.
It is. And it's not the end all. Sometimes like Salesforce, nobody gets excited about using Salesforce. But it's all the things combined that make up that total product experience, including doing at its core what it's meant to do better than anyone else.
Yeah. So, okay, with that, because when you started marketing, you were a college student, and now after over a decade of experience, what are the things that you learned that you can say is insider info, or anyone can be a better marketer just by knowing these things?
So I would say technically, I got my first start marketing when I was 7 years old, and I was sharpening pencils for my mom's colleagues. And this is like, they just wanted to keep me busy while I was hanging out with my mom at work. So I'm not trying to say, oh, I was some savant child of marketing. But what they did for me, and it's cheating because it was working at a PR department at a school that teaches PR here in Canada. So well-respected marketing school. So it's a little bit of a cheeky answer. But what they gave me was a letter of reference. And it was probably just something fun for the employees to do. They paid me like $4 or whatever it was, a couple of coins, the $2 coins were new in Canada at the time. And so I got a little bit of money, but I got a letter of reference. And I think that is the number one thing that marketers ignore is getting the happy customer testimonial. Whether it's a review on a platform like G2 Crowd, a review on your own website, even a review on Google. Because even for a lot of brands, their head office will be reviewed on Google. And, before going up for a demo, maybe the C-level executive just looks at the company that's pitching them. And if they see 6 reviews on Google and 3 of them are pissed off customers, that's not going to be that great. So I think it's very important to just capture something from a customer whenever they've had a good experience. Maybe it can be as little as a selfie if you're seeing them in person at a trade show. Just say, hey, look at all the happy customers that stopped by our booth. Are you next? Will we see you next year? Will we see you in the customer lounge? Or in the case of when I was 7, if it's something a little bit more bespoke, what are you doing to help ease future customers from making that purchase? And it could be if you're selling IT solutions or something really boring. Well, if you're a lot of times just helping potential customers understand that your business won't screw it up. And it's just really handling those objections before they even surface. And if it's something that's competitive, maybe it's a bit more commoditized and it's more of a solution, it's just showing the ways that you won't screw up their system, because that's going to be costly both in terms of dollars and time to reduce. If you're migrating servers and there's 2 days of downtime, that sucks. So having the testimonials that say, you know what, after over 2,500 migrations, we haven't lost a single minute of downtime. Just saying that out loud, you can almost just feel it relieves the stress just saying it. And when it's that dopamine hits and marketer and your buyers are in a good mood, you can just keep moving that deal forward. And I think that a big goal and job of marketing is to alleviate the pain of buying. And that could be reducing friction and adding up a little bit of lubricant. It could be just showing that people know what the benefits will be and just saying that, you know what, the change isn't that bad. Nobody likes change. Nobody wants to change their diet, go to the gym, buy a new car. Sometimes you just want to stick with what's familiar, even though you know you should do better. But if you can avoid that pain of just transitioning, or even if it goes wrong, then that will go a long way in helping your marketing overall.
Yeah, I get you. I get you.
Yeah.
If you alleviate a pain, then customer will just come running back every time.
Exactly. It's if you know for sure, but you also have to make sure that the customers know it was you that alleviated the pain.
Okay. Now that's an important point that I know that I've personally missed out on a couple of times as well.
And I don't mean that to say like, oh, you need to do this each and every single time, but it is a best practice that if you get into the habit of just sort of, I call it cleaning as you go. Same thing when I do, when I'm creating content, I'm not going to be able to do all 200 on-site methods as I publish. I'll never get anything done. But if I can hit 10 or 20, name my files appropriately, do my alt text, research my headings a little bit, over time, my organic SEO is just going to be that much better. And it's just building those good habits where those tactics become really just what you do day in and day out.
Okay. And what are your experiences in marketing in... Well, if we count since age of 7, that would be...
There were a lot of years there that I did nothing. Let's maybe just count the last decade, if we're being honest.
Okay. So in last decade, that you thought is the textbook strategy, but it failed. Something that is commonly known and works, mm-hmm. but failed for your experiment.
Yeah. So when I was running Treats Happen, my natural... dog treat company, we were Canadian based, but most of our traffic was coming from the US. And I knew that if we switched the conversion rate, it would just be way more profitable. So it made sense to launch a second site for US and Canada. I followed the data. I knew US e-commerce was more popular there. Everything made sense. It checked all the boxes. Huge disaster. Customer data got all mixed up. The US site didn't convert as well. It was confusing. Customers who had accounts had to create new ones. It was just a pain. So sometimes what's good for the masses isn't always great for you. If it's something that applies to 80% of the population, Pareto's principle, there's a 1 in 5 chance it won't work for you. So just take everything with a grain of salt and evaluate it for your circumstances. Just because the traffic is coming from elsewhere, If you have a cluster of customers in, say, New York City or now Miami or Austin, Texas, don't be afraid to double down on things that are local, even if it's not necessarily what scales. But creating a list in your CRM and just changing your subject line when emailing those people, if you've tagged it, that can make a huge difference, especially if that critical mass is there versus trying to appeal to everyone and, say, going international.
Okay. That's quite interesting, and I'm sure it will be helpful because this is something a lot of startups face or will face one time or another when they'll scale up.
Yeah, so, you have to make some tough decisions. You double down on the markets that are working for you, or you try and expand elsewhere as you grow. And it's a balance of both. But if you are nowhere near critical mass in a small hyper-targeted market yet, you don't need to be in a huge hurry to grow until you know for sure what works every single time.
Okay. That is for the anxious ones who want to do everything. Relax. What's working? Yeah, let it work.
Pick two. They're all good. But let's just maybe take a few of them, put them on the shelf over here. And what are the two that we're going to really balance? And then, you know, we can start juggling maybe three ideas at a time as we grow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I can use that one because I'm guilty of juggling a lot of ideas at once.
Yeah. But you can't juggle five balls if you can't juggle three. It's taken me a long time to learn that. Just go through the processes. You don't need to go through the steps too quickly, but it's really hard to skip them. If you're baking a loaf of sourdough bread and you don't let it rest, it's going to be soggy and it's not going to be done cooking because you skipped the step.
Yep. So, okay, when you started marketing,
yep,
did you find something unusual that is new for you, a product that is new for you, a market that is new for you? But when you research a bit, you discover that this market is actually quite saturated. And now you have to create a marketing campaign for that, or you have to launch the product as a startup. How would you go about that?
Yeah, I think that we're very reliant on getting new data versus looking at what's working. And maybe you come into something and you think it's untapped. So let's say using the Shopify ecosystem or e-commerce, it's easy to get up and running in Shopify and you think, okay, let's set now roll this out to Wix, GoDaddy, WooCommerce, BigCommerce, Magento, etc. But there are different nuances in just different markets. I think one of the things is to figure out at the core what the main thing is, because you can't adjust that and then really adjust for the nuances of each market and how those different buyers change and adapt over time.
Okay. So adapt to what is there in the situation in the market.
Just adapting to the messaging that works. Because somewhere along that line, you can call it a bottleneck, you can call it a drop-off, a leak in the bucket, however you define it, what is that point of loss where everything else is working? And then just figure that out. Maybe you need to send your emails more frequently. Maybe you need to send less emails. Maybe you need to send more emails. Whatever it is, you find that one little thing and that can make a huge, huge difference.
Wow. Okay. So now this could be one of the different questions, but mm-hmm. as a marketeer and an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. what does your day look like? How do you structure it with a lot of hats?
Yeah, I'll sort of go through my ideal morning routine. I kind of wake up with the sun. I don't really set an alarm that much. I just, when the sun gets up, I kind of start waking up. If I'm really tired, I'll sleep in a little bit more. If I'm excited, I get up a little bit earlier. Usually try to meditate every morning. I meditate quite a bit, sometimes in the morning, sometimes after lunch. Make a cup of coffee, sort of plan my day out, write a list. And then I, right now with Rolled Up, I just get up and I promote the show for 2 hours. And then I check my email into everything else. Right now, my job is just go and promote the shit out of what I'm working on until I'm tired of promoting it. Put another cup of coffee on, promote it for another little bit, and then I can get to everything else.
Okay. And basically it's all in marketing and in your startups, mm-hmm. other tasks you have delegated out.
Yeah. So I've delegated out the editing, write-ups, the production of a lot of the content. That's all delegated. Obviously the finances, but making sure that the numbers are in order just for the run rate, because that'll determine how aggressive you can be on promotions. If you have a little mm-hmm. bit more runway, you can be a little bit more aggressive on spending some money. If you have a little bit less, you really need to find the arbitrages and play a little bit more money ball to get that where it is. Maybe it's spending a little bit more time with an editor to give them more process versus someone more senior who can just get it. Maybe it's turning off paid. Maybe it's running lead ads to collect emails versus purchases, etc.
That would be interesting, working on all the different things. That feeling when you first delegate tasks, that mm-hmm. will the other person be able to do it as well as I do?
Mm-hmm.
How do you came over that? How did you manage that?
I still haven't. Micromanaging at the start, which sounds awful, but I think it's very important to show them how you do it and really show them what your quality expectations are and start slow, go step by step, show them how you want it to be done, and then slowly give give more flexibility and freedom for the creative inputs, because I've never had it come back worse over time, but give them how you want to start and then let them take it and run with it. And it always becomes better. But by starting really disciplined, you can always go back to that and say, oh, it's not working, let's go back to basics, and then start building it out from there. But if you start really loosening with a lot of freedoms, it's hard to get tighter after that. So always start really organized and disciplined. Show the quality of your outputs that you want. Because at the end of the day, it might be their work, but it's still your name that people are going to remember. So focus on the quality and then work with the goal of saying, you can do this however you want, your way, my standards, I think is really the way to do it. Because at the end of the day, you're no longer showing how it's done. You're doing that quality assurance and the checks to make sure everything is up and running in those standards.
Okay. Your way, my standards. That's something I'll certainly copy and use a lot of times now.
Well, if it's a blog post coming out and it's coming out under your blog and it's shit, and Dave talks about this too in the group, you're a seasoned professional. You know what shit looks like. It might hit all the keywords. It might hit the word count. But if it's shit.
Yeah.
So you have to stand up and say, this isn't good enough. I would be embarrassed to send this to a customer. I know what quality looks like, and this would be wasting our customers' time if I asked them to read it. I'm not comfortable hitting send on that blog post or video or whatever it happens to be.
Okay.
And sometimes you have to take it and just put it out there and just let it simmer, but you promote that one a little bit less. You can still salvage your cost from it so it doesn't go to waste, but don't feel that just because you've produced something, you have to promote it.
Okay. So be ready to bite it at times.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's important to have that bank of content and that roadmap in your pipeline. Just like you have your runway of money, you need a runway of content so you can say, okay, we've got three posts coming out. This one's already performing a little bit better than the rest. Let's use that as our keystone piece for the week that we're going to promote and have that pull everything else out. But if you're only producing one post a week and you have to promote it, even if it sucks, you're going to burn your audience. You're going to take a lot longer to do it than you can. And that's sort of what another tactic I use when testing any freelancers or even hiring. I'll give two people the exact same task and see which one comes out better.
That sounds like a good strategy. I
hope so.
I should have tried that. Now, since we are on the topic of people who are getting hired,
yep.
What would you advise to maybe students or young marketers who want to get a good job, land a good job?
Don't be afraid to reach out and just set up informational interviews and learn what the jobs actually are and say, hey, this is what I like doing. I'd love to get your advice on how I could make a career out of it and what I can do a lot and how I can take this skill that I enjoy doing and say, is there even a career in it? Because I think things like photography, there's such a demand now for good product photography or even just headshots. It all exists. And don't be afraid to reach out to people that you like. Most people will say yes. As long as you have good intentions and you're not an asshole, most people will say yes. Some people might say no, and that's fine. But if you ask five or six people and three of them say yes, that's pretty good. That's three more people than you were going to talk to. So yeah. I'd say, don't be afraid to just say hi. And especially when going to networking events, I always have a lot of respect for the students and the young entrepreneurs that come up to me. I always give them, or anyone who comes up just asking for my advice, I always have the time for them.
Wow. Yes. Even for me, like, you manage your time so that you could have this conversation.
I try. I don't know if I manage it. I just agree to it. But you never know what will come out of it. So
let's wrap it up with just one sentence on how would you like your new marketing hire to be so that they can grow?
Yeah, I'd like them to be the best version of themselves. And I think that that's really the best path to success. If they're a writer, Right. If they're a video editor, edit the videos. Don't worry about scripting. Just be the best version of yourself and what you want to do in 10 years. Having said that, try other things to take it home. You know what? Maybe you like the Big Mac, but you finally try the flame broiled Whopper and you wish you had tried it years sooner. But be the best version of yourself. It's okay to not be, everyone says, oh, I need a rock star, all star, this and that. Be a rock star at one thing and be fine at the other things. Like if you write really good scripts, you can have mediocre editing. If you edit your videos really well, your scripting doesn't need to be as good. So find the one thing that you really want to be good at and who you are and focus on that.
Work on your strengths.
Absolutely. All right, Nishant, where can people find you? Where can I listen to the podcast? And if you are listening to this on Apple, leave a 5-star review for God's sakes.
Sure thing. It'll be on Apple. It'll be on Spotify.
Awesome. All right. Take care. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm glad we could do it.
Thank you, Lucas. Thank you for taking time out.
Absolutely. Cheers.
It was really knowledgeable. I learned a lot. Oh, I'm sure the audience will too.
I hope so. Cheers.